We shall fight with growing confidence and growing strength in the air. We shall fight on the beaches. We shall fight on the landing grounds. We shall fight in the fields and in the streets. We shall never surrender until, in God's good time, the new world, with all its power and might, steps forth to the rescue and the liberation of people.
In times of universal deceit, truth is the only rebellion left. On today's show, the CDC issues a report updating its COVID-19 numbers, disclosing that only 9,210 Americans have died from COVID-19 alone. All of the rest had some other serious illnesses that helped contribute to their death. What does this have to do with C.S. Lewis's classic, The Abolition of Man, and his discussion and critique of science versus scientism? I'm Dr. Everett. Welcome to today's edition of The Rebellion. As I said in the intro, today we're going to talk about the current news as a context, as a segue, as a platform to discuss one of the great classics, C.S. Lewis's The Abolition of Man, and the difference between science and scientism. That's really the key point of today's show, and probably tomorrow's too, because we just won't have time to get into the whole thing today. So C.S. Lewis, The Abolition of Man, and the difference between science and scientism. A little hint here, science good, scientism bad. Okay, remember that as we start today's program and as we venture into tomorrow's also. Science good, scientism bad. Well, let's get back to the current news to set the context for this discussion. The CDC is now disclosing that 9,210 Americans died from COVID-19 alone. That should stun you. That should just cause everybody to just stop. Stop. Don't read anything else. Don't listen to anything else. Turn off your phone. This is the news of the week. This is the news of the month. This is the news since January 1. This is the news of the year. Only 9,210 Americans have died from COVID-19 alone. Now, why is that important news? That means that everybody else that has died during the pandemic of COVID-19 had something else going on in their lives. Diabetes, morbid obesity, emphysema, other respiratory illnesses, cardiovascular disease. They had something else going on in their lives that contributed to their death. Yes, they had the virus. And yes, the virus may have been something that contributed to tipping the scales in their health, but they had a lot of other stuff that wasn't good going on in their lives. And COVID-19 comes along, adds to the equation, and those people suffered death. Now, why is it something we should be talking about, that category versus the 9,210 that died from COVID-19 alone? Well, you should be asking the obvious question. Doesn't that prove that we should have been focusing on the people that were ill? And maybe we should have left everybody else alone and let them go about their daily lives, go to church, go to work, go to a restaurant, engage in their constitutional rights, their constitutional freedoms, be a free people in a free republic, living freely. But we've got a lot of people out there that have diabetes. We've got a lot of people out there that have cardiovascular issues. We've got a lot of people out there who have respiratory issues. And all of those people, beware, because this disease is very serious. It could kill you because of the comorbidities, new word that we've added to our national vocabulary in recent months, because of your comorbidities, meaning you're sick, you're not healthy. If you get COVID-19, it could kill you. Now, shouldn't that have been the message rather than shutting down the world and everybody in it? When you only have 9,210 people that have died from COVID-19 alone, that seems to scream proof that if we really cared about the vulnerable, if we really cared about taking care of people like the left pretends to be, if we really cared, we should have exclusively focused on nursing homes, hospitals, and all those people that were suffering cardiovascular disease, respiratory disease, diabetes, and obesity, among some other things. That's what we should have been doing. And had we done that, we probably would have saved a lot of lives among those groups, because we would have been giving them more attention and attending to their needs, the risks that they should be avoiding, and we wouldn't have destroyed the entire Western world's economy, and we wouldn't have compromised the very constitutional republic that America has enjoyed. Isn't that major news? It should be major news. Why isn't it? Why isn't it? Why is the left avoiding this issue? Why did they shut me down on Facebook when I posted this story? Why? Why did they call this fake news? Why did they call the commentary that I just spent 5 minutes offering you fake news? Why? It's because of scientism versus science. They claim to be people that are interested in following the science. They claim to be committed to the rationality of science. They accuse all of us religious folks and our who live in the heartland, you know, those folks that I've said over and over again that are deplorable, we lack gray matter, we're stupid rubes, we can't think our way out of a paper bag. They claim that we're the ones that are science deniers, but not really, because everything I said in the first 5-6 minutes of this show was based on science and data and facts, not feelings. But they are offended by it, and they shut me down. I'm going to read you a story, and then we're going to move from that story, that current news, on to what I've said, and that is C.S. Lewis's classic, The Abolition of Man. And then we'll spend tomorrow going through that book more specifically. Now, as I've said before, we've talked about Aristotle, we've talked about Edmund Burke, we've talked about Eric Voegelin in the last week, because all of these guys had one thing in common. Do you remember what it was? They believed in reality versus fantasy. They believed that government and politics and the human experience should be predicated on what's real, not on what we wish. In other words, they basically all believe what Ben Shapiro says over and over again. The facts don't care about your feelings. What I've said over and over again, I'm not going to give you a degree in opinions. You know, I don't pat you on the back when you graduate from university and say, here's your diploma, you majored in opinions. You know the routine. I've said it 1,000 times. Opinions are always dangerous. Opinions always lead to slavery and bondage, but Jesus said the truth shall set you free. The truth shall set you free. You shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. So, when I gave degrees out at Oklahoma Wesleyan University for the 17, 18 years that I was president there, I gave degrees where students actually majored in something like biology, like physics, like chemistry, like psychology, like theology, like, yeah, the list goes on and on. They majored in something. And I hoped that they learned something about those respective disciplines. I hope they knew a little bit more about what was true in biology and physics and genetics and chemistry than they did when they enrolled as freshmen. But because if they didn't know anything more when they graduated 4 years later, then they wasted their money. You heard me say that before. So Aristotle and Edmund Burke and Eric Voegelin were saying the exact same thing. They were saying that history proves the facts of history, the science of history, the empirical reality of history, not your feelings about history, but the empirical facts of history proves that when you discard the reality, the natural law, the common sense, then politics always crumbles. Politics always crumbles. That's Aristotle. Edmund Burke comes along in the era of the French Revolution. He says, there's going to be blood flowing in the streets if we don't get this one right this time. If you actually start deconstructing the traditions, the truths of French culture, if you actually believe you're going to solve all of your problems by following Diderot, who says we won't be satisfied until we strangle the last king with the entrails of the last priest. In other words, we're going to kill all of the government that now exists. We're going to kill it all. And we're going to kill the church. And then we're going to build a new society, a grand utopia out of the ashes. And Edmund Burke said, it isn't going to work. It isn't going to work. You're going to have the guillotine. You're going to have blood flowing in the gutters of France if you do this. And lo and behold, Edmund Burke was right. And then you had Voegelin that came along during World War II, and he had a front row seat to the Nazi Holocaust, the Third Reich, German socialism, National Socialism. He saw what was happening because they discarded the objective truths in favor of a postmodern construct of the Übermensch, the Superman. Remember? Pre-modern, supernatural, modern, simply natural, postmodern, Superman, the Übermensch. Well, Voegelin had a front row seat to the third one. The rise of the Übermensch, the Superman. We shall be as God. We will declare who's fit to live and who's not fit to live. We are the wise ones. We are the ones you've been waiting for. We are the change you seek because we're blonde, we're blue-eyed, we're Aryan, and we're superior. And everybody else that has a different level of melanin, sound familiar, is not fit to even live. They will serve us until we find them to be too expensive, and then we will burn them in furnaces because of the color of their skin or their race. It's very dangerous thinking, and we're on the verge of that right now in our current political debate. Obviously we are. I mean, Black Lives Matter is actually saying this stuff. You've heard me talk about, you've heard it in the news, where you have numerous black leaders across the country suggesting that white people are inferior because of the melanin levels. Their melanin levels makes them incapable of thinking deeply and thinking rightly. In other words, they're subhuman. If you don't have enough melanin in your skin, you are subhuman. This is the antithesis of Martin Luther King Jr.'s dream of judging people by the content of their character rather than the color of their skin. I digress. Quickly, I'm going to go through this story. We'll take a break, and then we'll talk about abolition of man, science, and scientism after the break. The story was broken by Gateway and others, Gateway Pundit. I'll read briefly out of their story, and you need to listen to this and why it is turning science upside down. This is not science. This is not science. They're denying science. It's scientism. All right, here's part of the Gateway Pundit story. Based on the recommendation of Drs. Fauci and Birx, the U.S. shut down the entire economy because only 9,000 American deaths have been due to the coronavirus? Question mark. In other words, it's a rhetorical question at the front end of this story. Why in the world did we do this if only 9,000 American deaths are due to the virus alone? What did Fauci and Birx have wrong? We should be asking that. We should be asking that. They go on and say this. The World Health Organization leaders told us that the coronavirus death rate would be 3.4%, and this was false. That's true. I don't care who you are, left, right, center, doesn't make any difference. That's true. That number's been false. The death rate hasn't been 3.4%. The Gateway Pundit has reported that the coronavirus fatality rate reported by the liberal mainstream media was completely inaccurate. Drs. Fauci and Birx pushed highly exaggerated mortality rates. Why did they do that? Well, we know for a fact that they used the Imperial College of Great Britain. They used the Imperial College model to persuade President Trump to lock down the entire U.S. economy. And Trump did it. And we should wonder, why did Trump do that, too? What was he thinking? Why wasn't he relying on other, broader, open, robust debate before he destroyed everything that his administration stood for? I don't know. But we're not being science deniers by asking that question. Anyway, back to the story. It was a fraudulent model, and it predicted that 2.2 million American deaths would result from the coronavirus pandemic. 2.2 million. It was wrong. It was wrong. We haven't even suffered 10% of that. It was wrong. And that's a fact. Back to this. Fauci and Birx met with President Trump privately and urged him to shut down the U.S. economy and destroy the record that Trump had based his entire administration on. But the Imperial College model was garbage, says Gateway Pundit. It was completely flawed, and that's true. Even the people at the Imperial College admit that. And by the way, the lead epidemiologist of Great Britain right now is saying that they were wrong, and they shouldn't have shut down the economy, and that their solutions were worse than the disease. He's actually said that in the last week. That's news. Why aren't we talking about that? Well, anyway, back to the story. Today we now have empirical evidence that the World Health Organization, Dr. Fauci, and Dr. Birx were all wrong. The CDC updated its numbers this week to show that only 6% of all coronavirus deaths were completely due to the coronavirus alone. I've already talked about that. The rest of the deaths are attributed to individuals who had other serious issues going on in their lives. Most of the deaths are among the very old who had comorbidity. So why weren't we focusing on protecting those people, quarantining those people, servicing those people, rather than shutting down
everything else. Why? We should be asking that question. But when I post this story on Facebook, they block me. They say it's fake news. Why? What is fake about any of this? Can anybody tell me what's fake about anything that's just been presented? But Facebook blocks it, saying it's inaccurate, it's not worthy of reading, it needs to be canceled. Somehow it's compromised their view of what acceptable scientific discussion entails. That is not science. It's scientism. Let's take a break right now, and when we come back, we'll get into just a snippet, just a teaser of C.S. Lewis's work, The Abolition of Man. I'm Dr. Everett Piper, and this is The Rebellion. Welcome back to The Rebellion. So I spent the first half of the show obviously talking about some things that I find to be very important, and that is the current news and how the mainstream media, social media, Facebook, Twitter, the Democratic Party, and even many Republicans are spinning the science, spinning the data in a politically manipulative way, in a religiously manipulative way. In fact, they make their view of science a new religion. And that's what C.S. Lewis warned of. Let me read you a couple quotes. In science, we have been reading only the notes to a poem. In Christianity, we find the poem itself. C.S. Lewis, Miracles. One more time. There's depth in that. There's understanding in that. Because he distinguishes between science and the deeper issues of life, the religious issues of life, the Christian issues of life. One more time on that quote. In science, we've been reading only the notes to a poem. In Christianity, we find the poem itself. So Lewis is arguing that science has limitations and it needs to be digested, it needs to be read, it needs to be interpreted within the context of what it truly is. And when you move outside of that context and make science a religion, when you make science an orthodoxy that can't be challenged, can't be compromised, and when you claim that anybody that challenges science is a heretic, you have now turned science upside down and on its ear. It's no longer an objective search for the empirical facts. It's a protection of the orthodoxy of what you've concluded, what your little elite group has concluded, is acceptable thinking. Now, what does that smack of? That smacks of religion. That smacks of orthodoxy versus heresy. That is not the realm of science. Science is only the notes to the poem. The poem is found in the mother of all sciences, and that is theology. Christianity is the poem itself. Science is just the notes. So you have to put science in its category, and when you allow it to get outside of that category, then it becomes a fraudulent religion because it pretends to be the poem when it's not. It is only the notes. I hope I'm making sense there. If not, let's go on to another quote from C.S. Lewis in Miracles. Not The Abolition of Man yet, but it sets the context for what we're going to talk about and why Lewis felt the words that he wrote in Abolition of Man were so important. And they were. They were just prophetic for our time. Here's another quote from Miracles. Men become scientific because they expected law in nature. Men became scientific because they expected law in nature. And they expected law in nature because they believed in a legislator. In most modern scientists, this belief has died. It will be interesting to see how long their confidence in uniformity survives it. Two significant developments have already appeared: the hypothesis of a lawless sub-nature and the surrender of the claim that science is true. We may be living nearer than we suppose to the end of the scientific age. This is C.S. Lewis in Miracles. He's writing this back in the 1940s and 50s. Okay? It sounds like he was writing it about today's news. I'm going to read that quote one more time. Men became scientific because they expected law in nature. Where did this current discussion of science, of the objective versus the subject, of the empirical facts versus the emotional constructs. Science is supposed to be the defender of the things that are proven to be true through the scientific method. Men became scientific because they expected law, predictability. They expected the law of gravity to prevail so they could test the law of gravity. They expected other things to be testable, and therefore they were able to prove various different things by the scientific method. Men became scientific because they expected law and order and predictability in nature. And they expected law in nature because they believed in what? A legislator, with a capital L. In other words, they became scientific because they believed in the laws of nature and in nature's God. That's where science came from. You can't be a scientist if you don't recognize the predictability of the world around us. If the world is haphazard and there's no predictability, then you can test nothing. So science assumes law. It assumes the law of nature and nature's God. That's the assumption. That's why so many of the forefathers of the scientific method, the founding fathers of the scientific method, were Christians. Galileo, Newton, they were Christians. They were Orthodox Christians. They were believers because they understood that because God was predictable, his laws were predictable, and nature was built upon that God and those laws, that you could test things to see if they were true. Because there's a legislator with a capital L, you can find out what's going on in the world around you. You can look at the laws. They're trustworthy. They're predictable. They're enduring. They're immutable. Okay, back to the quote. In most modern scientists, this belief has died. Well, we know that. Carl Sagan, there's nothing but the cosmos. That's all there is. There's no God. They laugh at the idea of God. But yet they claim to be scientists. Well, how can you test anything if nothing is testable? If nothing's predictable? If everything's hazard? If nothing has happened because of design, but it only happened because of chance? Well, then anything that you try to do in terms of the scientific method could be chance too. Okay. In most modern scientists, this belief has died. And it will be interesting to see how long their confidence in uniformity survives. Two significant developments have appeared: the hypothesis of a lawless subnature and the surrender of the claim that science is true. We may be living nearer than we supposed to the end of the scientific age. Well, the way we're reacting to the COVID thing is proof of that. Because we can't even discuss the objective fact that slightly over 9,000 people, only 9,000 people have died from COVID alone. Everybody else had a contributing factor. We can't discuss that fact. That's blocked on Facebook. That's blocked on Twitter. That's blocked in social media. The left labels it as fake news. To discuss the fact that only 9,000 people have died of COVID-19 alone and everybody else died of other contributing factors in addition to COVID-19. Why can't we discuss that? It's because C.S. Lewis warned of it. In most modern scientists, the belief has died. The belief in the laws of nature and nature's God, the predictability of the legislator, that's died. And he then goes on and says, it'll be interesting to see how long their confidence in uniformity survives. Well, it won't. They won't believe in uniformity, in predictability. They won't believe in the stability of the sciences any longer. You won't even be able to discuss the real data because that is going to be politicized. It's going to be made into a religion versus an objective search for truth. Two significant developments have already appeared: the hypothesis of lawlessness, a lawless subnature, and the surrender of those who claim that science is true. Another quote. Lewis wrote with great concern about scientism's totalitarian potential. He wrote about it in The Hideous Strength, one of his space trilogy novels, published over 75 years ago. He talks about scientists who forget the limits of their discipline. And they cast off ethical restraints and assume control of what? They assume control of what? Public policy. Sound familiar? Fauci and Birx and the rest of the scientific community. They've cast off the restraints, the parameters of their discipline, and now they assume control of public policy. According to Lewis, science steps dangerously outside its bounds when it assumes it has all knowledge, especially moral knowledge. The very essence of our life as conscious beings, all day and every day, consists of something which cannot be communicated except by hints and smiles and metaphors and the use of emotion, which are pointers to it. This is C.S. Lewis on religious language. The essence of our lives as conscious beings is something more than what we can just test in a tube. That's for the church to help us understand. Science, go test your stuff in a tube, but don't presume religious policy and public policy, ethics and morality, that's not your job. You can't do that because you can't test those things in a tube. You can't tell me from a laboratory experiment that you've proved that rape is wrong or that slavery is bad or that racism is an evil thing. Those are all things that we understand through hints and smiles and metaphors and the use of our emotions and our spirit and our gut, the imago Dei that's printed on our soul. All of these things point to those truths, but you can't put them in a test tube. You can't put this in a test tube. You can't test them in a laboratory and prove them empirically. You just know through the human experience that it's wrong to kill people. It's wrong to lie. It's wrong to steal. It's wrong to rape. Racism is bad, and slavery wasn't a good idea. These are all things that we know. We know. We have knowledge of them, but they aren't scientific per se. They're moral. They're ethical. They're religious in the positive sense. This sets the stage for what we're going to talk about tomorrow. Tomorrow, the abolition of man, and we'll get in more deeply into the debate, the discussion, the distinction between science and scientism. Remember, if you want to subscribe to The Rebellion, go to patreon.com/Dr. Everett Piper. Patreon.com/Dr. Everett Piper. Go to my website, that's drevertpiper.com, drevertpiper. That's drevertpiper.com. I'm Dr. Everett Piper, and this is The Rebellion.